नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनि नामिनि नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंदा श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा। So thank you all very much for joining today's session. So we have been discussing from Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentary. So we have been discussing from the theme of the knowledge of soul, the technical section, right? So, okay. So I will quick recap while others also join. Some few more may join. I'll do a quick recap of what we have seen till now. So in this section, Arjuna has now presented various arguments for not fighting and eventually accepted that actually I'm not sure what I want to do, whether I want to fight or not. I'm not very sure. And then he says to Krishna, accepts him as his guru. And the first instruction that Krishna says, or the first thing that Krishna speaks as a guru to Arjuna, Ashochan anma shochastvam pragyavadamscha bhashase gatasun agatasunscha nanu shochanavita. He says, my dear Arjuna, you are speaking like a very wise person, but don't you know that a wise person does not lament for the loss of the gross body or the subtle body or the soul? Thus, gross body is always dying. The subtle body, if it gets destroyed, it means liberation. And a wise person really appreciates liberation. And no one laments for the destruction of the soul because the soul can't be destroyed. Right? So then he says, Natvevaham Jatunasham Natvam Neme Janadipa Nachaivana Bhavishyamaha Sarveva Mataparam. Establishing the eternality of soul, he says that there was never a time when I did not exist, there was never a time when did not exist, there was never a time when all these things did not exist, and there will never ever be a time in future when any of us would cease to exist. Basically, he is telling that, my dear Arjuna, during while a person is living, you know, is your object of affection the body or the soul? So he says, if you say that the object of affection body, then if you say that the object of affection is the soul, then the soul cannot be the object of lamentation, the reason for lamentation. Why? Because the soul does not die. There was never a time when the soul does not exist. There was never a time when the soul will cease to exist in the future also. Right? Oh, someone says that there was no voice in between. Others also could not hear the voice, or is my voice clear? Is my voice clear? Can you please type it on the chat box and let me know? Clear now. Was it unclear in between? Was it unclear in between? For a few seconds. Okay. Fine. Okay, I'm not very sure. Okay, now it's clear. Fine. So, just hold on. Let me check. Okay. Anyway. So please, if it becomes again unclear, just let me know. So he says that the object of affection is the, if the object of affection is the soul, then it cannot be the object of temptation, because the soul is eternal. And at the time of death also, the soul exists, does not die. So therefore, if you say that your object of affection is the soul, then the soul cannot be the object of lamentation. Right? That's what he is addressing in this particular verse. Then he says, someone may say, no, the object of affection is not the soul, but the object of affection is the body. Okay? So when the body gets destroyed, then there is a reason for lamentation. So Krishna says, Dehinosmin yata dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tata dehantara praptis dhirastatra namuyati. Oh Arjuna, if you say that the object of affection is the body and you should lament for the destruction of body, but don't you know when one grows childhood to youth, the childhood body gets destroyed and the youthful body is generated. And then from the youthful body to middle-aged body, the youthful body is destroyed and the middle-aged body is generated. And from middle-aged body to old body, the middle-aged body is destroyed and the old body is generated. So even during the so-called life period of a person, when he is still alive and not yet dead, there are so many times when his body gets destroyed, the gross body gets destroyed. Why you don't lament during that? So therefore he says, if your object of affection is the body, and if you have to lament for the destruction of the body, then throughout the life you should lament, because the moment the body is getting destroyed. Okay. That is the point that he is making here. But Arjuna may say that, look, my dear Krishna, what you say is right. I accept that, you know, there is no need to lament for the loss of the body or the soul, because soul does not get destroyed and body is always getting destroyed. But one thing did you recollect, whether it was a middle-aged Bhishma or old-aged Bhishma, I had asked that Bhishma, that Bhishma showered so much affection on me. Now, when this Bhishma changes from an old worn out body to a new body, as you are telling, I will not get association of that Bhishma. I was experiencing so much joy by the warmth of that, by that warm relationship with that Bhishma, and that relation will be gone. So isn't that a reasonable reason to lament? So Krishna says, now you have a valid point. He says, yes, this is a valid reason to lament, but this is the nature of things. In this material world, nothing is permanent. Every emotion, every material experience, every material emotion, whether it is favorable or unfavorable, is agama, apayino, anityaha. It will come, it will go, and it is always temporary only. So understanding this nature of materials, you should understand that, you know, whatever is happening to every single person in this world is only happening to you. So you should not get unduly worried about it. Learn to tolerate it. So nothing unjust is happening just for you. So you should learn to tolerate these things. So that's what he's telling in Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukodukvada Agama Apayino Anityaha Tam Stitikshasva Bharata. Right? Then he says that what is the advantage, what is the benefit that one gets by learning to tolerate? By learning to, what is the benefit that one stands to gain by learning to be equalized in distress and happiness? Yam hina vyatayante purusham purusharushabha samadukka sukam dhiram somritatvaya kalpate. He says, a dhira, one who is not actually disturbed by sukha and dukkha, one who learns to be equipoised, he is awarded liberation. Saha Amritatvaya Kalpate, he becomes qualified to attain liberation. So therefore, there is a lot at stake, Arjuna. Learn to tolerate. Right? Then he says, Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha ubayorapi drishtvanta stvanayos tattva darshibihi. He says, one who is a knowledgeable person, he learns to see this nature of body and soul. That for the body, a body, whatever you want, it cannot remain. And the soul, whatever you do, cannot be destroyed. So one who is a real Tattvadarshi understands the nature of this truth. Okay. Then he says, Avinashitu tadviddi yena sarvam idam vinasham avyayasyasya nakaschit kartum arhati. He said that understand that the soul, that by which the body is pervaded, is indestructible. No one can destroy it, destroy that which is indestructible. Right? So, this was a long discussion that we had last time. I will not go into this whole thing. So, this is where we ended our discussion last week. So, today we will start from the 18th verse onwards. Any quick comments, discussion points based on what we did last week and what we have summarized this week? Anything anyone would like to share, ask, add? Okay, if there is none, then we will continue our discussion. So, Vishnu continues to speak about the nature of body and soul. He says, Antavanta ime deha nitya shoktaha sharirin anashino aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. He says, ime deha, this body, these bodies, nityasya uktaha sharirinah. These bodies belonging to the eternal soul. Shariri is the soul. Nityasya shariri. Nitya shariri. Body belonging to the eternal soul. And what is the nature of this soul? Anashino. It is indestructible. Aprameyasya. Aprameyasya means very small. Very small means that which cannot be measured. So small. So these bodies belonging to the eternal soul, which is indestructible and very small, is antavanta. It is temporary. Tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Therefore, fight, O Bharata. Whether you destroy the body or whether you destroy, even if you don't destroy the body will anyway get destroyed. And even if you want to, you cannot kill the soul. So therefore, by fighting, you are not going to change any inevitable truth of this material world. That's what Krishna is telling. He says, this body, whether you kill or not, will anyway die. This soul, even if you want to kill, can never be killed. So you are not going to change any inevitable truth. So whether you do it or not, it's anyway going to happen. So why do you want to stop engaging in your duty? Of course, he has not started to speak about his duty yet, but he is telling that, therefore, just fight. Just fight. You are not going to change any inevitable truth by your fighting. So whether you fight or not, the grass body will get destroyed. And even if you fight fiercely, you can never touch the soul. So therefore, just fight. That's what he's telling here. So here Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur says, this verse also clarifies verse 16. The possessor of the body, the jiva, is beyond measure or difficult to understand because it is very, very small. Aprameyasya. Therefore, you should fight. This means that you should not give up your dharma as prescribed in the scripture. Don't give up your dharma. Whether you fight or not, the body will get destroyed. And whether you fight or not, the soul cannot be destroyed. But if you fight, then you do your dharma, you are engaging in your dharma, and by engaging in your dharma, you move one step closer to liberation. Right? So why you are not willing to fight? Just fight. That's what he's telling. Any quick comments, discussion points on this verse? Okay, let's continue then. Then Krishna continues.
Enam vetti hantaram yaschainam manyate hatam ubau tauna vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate.
Yaha vetti, one who knows, enam, that this soul, hantaram, is the killer. Yaha manyate, or one who considers, enam hatam, that the soul is killed. Ubhau tau na vijanito. He really does not know. Because na ayam hanti, neither the soul can kill, na hanyate, nor it can get killed. He cannot be the killer or he cannot be killed. Like that. Yes. Sonar Sakhi Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji Dandarpana. Prabhuji, there is one verse which I don't remember the number. So it says that about the balancing of our sleep and balancing about health and balancing about diet. So
yuktahara viharasya yuktacheshtasya
karmasu yuktacheshtasya karmasu yukta svapnavabodhasya
svapnavabodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha.
So this shloka and the discussed shloka, so can we discuss something with, like, because they look like
contradictory.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, so here verse comes in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where a yogi, what kind of lifestyle he should have to achieve success in his practice of yoga, that is described there. Here the difference between body and soul is described. So here it is yayenam veti hantaram yaschainam manyate hata. So which verse you're talking about, Mataji? Previous verse or this verse?
Na bhavato vidyate satam. It's like it was posing, no? That anyway the body is going to, like, means atma
die.
And,
Okay. So here, the purpose of Krishna speaking this, the difference between body and soul to Arjuna, is to clear a very, very basic misconception about self-identification. You know, body and soul. Once that is said, it's not that body has no utility. So body will anyway die, but but with body, useful things can be accomplished. You know, body is the vehicle through which useful things can be accomplished.
Yes.
So how yoga can be practiced, how Ashtanga yoga can be practiced, using body to achieve a higher goal, that is described in the 6th chapter. So now, something very basic, because here the immediate concern for Arjuna is, should I kill Bhishma and Drona or not? By killing, there are 6 reasons that he gives. By killing, I will be causing them pain. By killing, I will be committing sinful activities. And so many such things, you know, by killing, all kinds of dharma will be stopped and all that. So each of those concerns Krishna is addressing here. So by telling that, the body will anyway die. He is not suggesting that one should not take care of the body. It's not the argument of Krishna here. So, but he is telling that, look, whether you fight or not, the body will anyway die. But in trying to protect that dying body, you will give up your dharma. That's what he is telling. So, when he will speak to Arjuna in the 6th chapter, at that, in that chapter, Arjuna's dharma is to perform yoga. So he's telling that, so your dharma is to perform yoga. How you can perform yoga? In order to perform yoga, you have to keep your body and soul together. Because if your body is not in touch with the soul just with the subtle body cannot perform any yoga. And if yoga is not performed, a higher destination cannot be attained. So for the soul to attain a higher destination, it needs a human body. And that human body has to be well maintained in order to perform yoga and achieve perfection. How you can perfectly maintain your body? Yukta ahara, yukta vihara, yukta chesha, yukta karmasu, yukta svapnavabodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkaha. Like that he is indicating. Is that clear, Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhuji. It means that the context of the they are totally different. Yeah,
totally different. So, if it's not that he is telling that you should not take care of your body. That's not what is suggested here.
Yes.
Okay. So. Anything else anyone would like to share, add? Okay. So let's continue then. Okay. So he says, those who think that the soul kills and those who think that the soul is killed do not know. The soul does not kill or gets killed. Of course, that does not mean that if you go and commit a murder, you cannot say, don't you know that the soul does not kill and the soul is not killed. So then the police will say, if he is a knowledgeable policeman, and a knowledgeable judge, one who knows Bhagavad Gita, he says, he will say that the soul is also aprameya. Aprameya means it's so small that it cannot even be seen or noticed. So he will say, you are not the body, you are the soul, and the soul cannot be seen, so the soul cannot be arrested also. So don't worry about it. No one is arresting you because no one can arrest you. The soul cannot be arrested. So that is the point. So basically that does not mean that you can go out and separate the body from the soul. That right we do not have. So there is a very funny story about how you can play with the words and get, if you know word jugglery, then you can get away from anything. So there was once I shared it recently somewhere, but I don't know if I shared it in this forum or which forum, I don't know. There was once a Mayavadi guru who was teaching his students that Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya, this world illusion and all that. So students were very fired up, okay. We have learned something very important like that. And then they were moving in the forest one day and suddenly they heard the roaring of a tiger. So students got really scared. But they were a little bit hesitant to run. They were a little bit hesitant to run. But they saw that if we run, it will be a shame on our guru, because he has just taught us that Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. So if this world is illusion, and right in front of our guru, if we run, just by hearing roar of this tiger, we will, you know, it will be shame on our guru. Like that, everyone was thinking, and they wanted to look at their guru to get his approval. They turned around and they saw the guru had already run 1 kilometer away. And then these students got really scared, and they also ran helter-skelter to different directions and are running away. And finally, everyone managed to escape from the tiger, and they all came together. They asked the guru, he said, "My dear guru, Gurudev, you won't taught us Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya, that this world is an illusion. And now when you heard the sound of the tiger, you are the first person to run away. What is this?" So you are not practicing what you are teaching. The guru said, "You fools, you did not understand the teaching properly." He said, "Now I will explain you the, now I will give you the purport to this whole thing." He said, you heard the sound of the tiger, right?" They said, "Yes." He said, "No, that was an illusion." And then they said, "You saw me running, right?" He said, "That was also an illusion." So neither did the, you know, you are hearing the sound of the tiger was an illusion, you are seeing me running was an illusion, and everything is illusion. This is proper Mayavad. Just try to understand like that. So if one wants to, if one can understand a part of the truth, and just like Mataji asked now, that you know, this verse says, you know, the body will anyway get destroyed. So but in the sixth chapter, Krishna says, Yuktahara Viharascha Yukta Cheshtasya Karma. So he's talking about taking care of the body. So isn't it contradictory? No, it is not contradictory. Anyway, the body will get destroyed. So why give up your dharma? That is what he is addressing here. A Kshatriya's dharma is to fight. Okay. Bhishma Dev's dharma is to fight. And if he fights on the battlefield and he dies, he will go to heaven. Or he will go to a greater destination. Similarly, so that is how a Kshatriya is supposed to utilize his body in performing dharma, in performing his Kshatriya dharma. Similarly, a yogi is supposed to utilize his body in performing the dharma of a yogi, which is Ashtanga Yoga. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita does not suggest that body will anyway deteriorate, so you should not take care of it. That is not the message. So similarly, this verse says that the soul can never kill nor it be killed. So if using this philosophy, someone may say, someone may commit a murder and say, "Look what Bhagavad Gita says, soul can never kill, and soul is never killed also." So he may say that. So, you know, this is using the misusing the philosophy to one's own interest. But if the other person is intelligent, he can also do the same thing. The soul, if the soul cannot kill and the soul cannot be killed, then the soul cannot be arrested also, because aprameya. Anashino aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bhar. In the previous verse he says. So in this verse he says that the soul cannot be arrested also. So don't worry, no one is arresting you. If the soul is so small, if you are put inside the prison also, you escape through the prison. So Prabhupada also in the purport, he says that this does not, Krishna is not giving a license for anyone to kill like that. You cannot kill the soul, But you can prematurely separate the gross body from the soul, which is actually a sinful act. That is the point. So that's what this verse is talking about. So here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, "Oh friend Arjuna, you a soul as well are neither the performer of killing nor the object of killing." That is expressed in this verse. Who thinks the jiva is the killer, that Arjuna is the killer of Bhishma and others, and he who thinks that the jiva is killed, that Arjuna is killed by Bhishma, are both ignorant. Therefore, what is your fear of infamy from the words of ignorant people who say that Arjuna killed his guru? Of course, you go ahead and kill your guru, definitely there is infamy in one sense. But what he is telling is, you are fighting on a dharmic battlefield. He has taken the side of adharma. He is willing to fight with you. If you don't fight, you are not, if you fight and kill, no, you will not get infamy because he chose to fight with you. And on an even battlefield, you have to face your enemy, whoever it may be. Okay. So infamy will not come by facing Bhishma, because who is also ready to face you? If he is willing to, if he is willing to kill his grandson, then the grandson on a dharmic battlefield should not see whether it's a grandfather or anyone. If he is on the opposite side, he has to fight a fair battle and kill. That is his dharma. He is doing his dharma, you are doing your dharma. So there is no relationship on the battlefield. So you will not get any infamy by fighting and killing your opponent. Okay. Rather, if you run away, telling that, you know, no, I cannot kill, then you will get infamy. This is from the dharmic point of view and from a Sankhya point of view. Sankhya is understanding the difference between body and soul. From the Sankhya point of view also, the soul cannot be killed. So you are not really responsible for killing in that sense. Okay. Any quick comments, discussion points on this theme? Just hold on first. Oh no. Okay. Okay. So there is a question in the chat box. The meat eaters use this to their advantage of continuing slaughter since soul cannot be killed. Yeah, I mean, those who want to, you know, just twist the things, they can do anything, you know. Because it's just taking one statement from the Shastra out of context. You can take any statement out of context and do anything. This is not the complete philosophy. Yeah. If someone wants to do their nonsense, and they can do quoting. You know, half quoting the Shastras, that is always possible. Okay. Any other discussion points on this verse? Okay. So let's continue then.
Najaye mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va nabhuyah. अजो नित्यशाश्वतोऽयं पुराणो न हन्यते हन्यमाने शिरे न जायते द सोल इज नेवर बॉर्न न म्रियते वा कदाचित् एंड द सोल कैन नेवर डाई न अयम भूत्वा नॉर वाज इट एवर बॉर्न इन द पास्ट न वा भूयः भविता एंड नॉर इट विल एवर बी बॉर्न इन द फ्यूचर सो द क्रिएशन the creation of soul never happened and it will never ever happen in future. Okay, so it's eternal. Destruction of the soul also never ever happened before, it will never happen in the future also. Okay,
Ajaha. Ajaha means ajanma. It has no creation in the past, present and future. It is never a created entity. Nityaha means it has no destruction in the past, present and future. That is the meaning of ajo, nityaha, shashvataha. Therefore, because it has no creation and no destruction, therefore it is shashvataha, therefore it is eternal. Ayam pura naha. Pura means ancient, but naha, na means nava. Therefore it is ancient. The soul is very ancient, but it is not subject to aging. It does not age. Like that. Ayam puranaha na hanyate, and it is not killed. Sharire hanyamane, when the body is killed, soul is not killed. So again the nature of soul is described. Na jayate na mriyate va kadachan. Nayam bhutva bhavitava na bhoyaha. The soul never took birth in present and future. The soul can never die in the past, present and future. Therefore, it is shashvataha, eternal. And puraha, even though it is most ancient, but it is not subject to aging. And when the body is destroyed, the soul does not get destroyed. More or less similar things, but he is presenting in a very convincing way to Arjuna so that he understands the nature of body and soul. And understanding clearly the nature of body and soul, he becomes confident to perform his duty. Okay. So, here Vishwanatha Chakradhagur says, the eternal nature of the jiva is here clearly proven. The first line negates the possibility of birth and death for the jiva at the present time. Na jayate na mriyate va. Right? Kadachit. The second line negates birth and death in the past and in the future. Nayam bhutva bhavitava na bhuyaha. Okay. So, there is no birth and death for the jiva in the present time. There is no birth and death for the jiva in the past and future. Therefore, it is ajaha. It's unborn in the past, present and future. Because of no birth, it has no previous non-existence. Prag abhav. When was the time when jiva was not there? Never. So, it is ashvataha. It exists at all times. Meaning that at no time in past, present or future will it be destroyed. That is prag abhav and bhamsha abhav. There is no prior non-existence and there is no future non-existence. It's always there. Therefore, it is eternal. But the Purvapaksha, the Purvapaksha argument is that, but you, someone may say, but if the soul exists for such a long time, then it must be growing old, right? It must be old. He says, no, though it is old, it is as if new, na, for nava, because of the absence of the six states of transformations. Okay, so the body undergoes six types of transformations, but the soul does not undergo six types of transformations. What are the six types of transformations? Can someone share? You must be knowing this, right? What are the six types of transformations? Anyone would like to share? Yes, Sonar Sakhi Mataji.
Asti jayate vardhate na vardhate parinamate ani te reproduce karu shaktat na.
Yeah.
They can reproduce.
Birth, growth, then
transformation.
Transformation.
And
then deterioration.
One can reproduce.
reproduction, deterioration, and death. Right? And yeah. So these are the six changes that body can undergo. Of course, but these are the six changes body undergo in, or matter can undergo in touch with soul. When matter is not in touch with soul, some of changes cannot happen. For example, reproduction cannot happen. When the soul is not touched, reproduction cannot happen. Right? Dwindling and other things can happen. Reproduction and a few other growth cannot happen when the soul is there. So few things cannot happen, but when the body is in touch with the soul, these six changes happen. But these six changes do not happen to the soul. They happen to the body only. Right? So, so he says, with the death of the body, will it not die along with the body? He says, it does not die when the body dies, because it is not joined permanently with the body. The soul is not subservient to it. So, the connection of the soul with the body is made due to avidya, ignorance. There is no real connection of the body with the soul. It is just imagined. It is just imagined. Swapna drashtur ivanjasa. It is just like a dream. In a dream, you think a tiger is running behind you and you are running and running and running. But in reality, there is no tiger running behind you. So, similarly, the soul identifying with the body is like a dream state. Okay. In reality, there is no connection with the of the body with the soul. But avidya potency can create that kind of an illusion. The soul is starts identifying with the body, but in reality, there is no connection between the body and soul. Atma mayam rite rajan parasyanubhavatmanah na gateta artha sambandha swapna drashtur ivasa. This is what Shukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj. Na gateta artha sambandha. There is no real contact between the body and soul. It is only created by the avidya potency, which makes him falsely identify with the body. Like that. Any quick comments, discussion points on this verse? 20th verse. Yes, Sachi Pranko.
Prabhu Dandatanam, please accept my
humble. Dandatanam, yes,
Prabhu. So getting questions. Sometimes when we know the philosophy, we sometimes apply at wrong places, like when the death happens to near ones or, you know, in a public, something, you know, happen. Then as a Vaishnava, we should be like having compassion for the feelings of others. Mm-hmm. But for the philosophy, that emotions may not, you know, appear that moment, because we know that yes, anyone can die. What is, you know? So we become we apply philosophy at some such places where the person in front is in agony.
Yeah. So this is we should therefore know what is the application of this philosophy, where it should be applied, and as devotees how it should be applied. So as you rightly said, we can always become very callous and hard hearted and be very unsympathetic to real miseries which people may undergo. So even though if those people, when they understand the nature of body and soul, their suffering may get little bit mitigated, but that may not necessarily be the right time when philosophy needs to be spoken. So sometimes you may have to just sit with that person and just cry with that person. Even though you know that that a reality is different, that the soul does not die, you know that. But as Arjuna mentioned that, yes, the soul will not die, but will I get the association of Bhishma Dev when that soul, when that Bhishma Dev soul moves to another body? I will not get the association of Bhishma Dev. So that is very much lamentable to me, right? Which is true. So similarly, the person lamenting not because the body is dead, the soul is dead, but the person may be lamenting because he will no longer get the association of that person, of that relative who has left, so, which is very reasonable. So even Vaishnavas, Narottam Das Thakur writes, Pashane Kutibo Mata Anale Pashibo. Like that, he says that I will, you know, feeling separation from the Vaishnavas, I feel like I want to hit my head on a rock or enter fire. Why? Doesn't Narottam Das Thakur know that, you know, the soul does not die and the body anyway dies? That is true. But then what about the association of that person? When he moves to another body, we will not get that association. So generally the lamentation is for that. Even though Krishna is telling that, understand the nature of body and soul, Arjuna. Fine. That is all fine. But still, when Arjuna raises the point that I will not get the association, is tolerant. What can I do? What can you do? And tolerance cannot come. Any tolerance, any quality for that matter, only if you have invested, then you can, then you can get it. So when someone is at a stage of deep grief, and if he has not invested in developing that tolerance, at that point of time, you cannot go and tell tolerate like that. So at that time, you have to sit with him and cry with him, embrace him, give him your shoulder so that he can cry. So by that, we can earn his trust. And then later when he develops faith in us, then gradually when he is in a normal mood, we can start giving him some philosophy. So many times, we understand the philosophy wrong, or sometimes very rarely when we understand the philosophy right also, we misapply the philosophy at the wrong place. So this is very much possible. Good you brought out this point. Is that relevant? Achi Pran Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhuji. Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Lokanath Prabhu.
Prabhuji, this episode of one more devotee has asked, like Arjuna crying after Abhimanyu's death. Mm-hmm. So the explanation that is given by Prabhupada and other devotees are, is that emotions are normal, but because he had understood Bhagavad Gita, that we can understand by the fact that next day again he went to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we see Duryodhan also fought. Duryodhan, his 99 brothers died and he continued fighting. So how do we differentiate that, you know, Arjuna had understood? Actually, I see that many places we just give the explanation. Even if he's crying, we say that, okay, he's crying because he's a Vaishnava, not because he's his son. And when others do, then we say, you know, they are on bodily platform. So how do we differentiate actually?
Well, how do we differentiate? See, in one sense, tolerance in itself is not necessarily a Vaishnava quality.
Yeah.
Tolerance can be in the mode of goodness. Tolerance can be in the mode of passion. Tolerance can be in the mode of ignorance. Tolerance can be transcendental. So just because someone is able to tolerate, that the loss of some dear ones, that does not necessarily mean that he is very spiritually advanced. So there can be austerity in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, and transcendental austerity. So none of these qualities in one sense are necessarily transcendental. So sometimes you do see, tolerance of hunger. People who are drug addicts, internet addicts, people have, it is just like they have overcome hunger and thirst, like Parikshit Maharaj. They were so addicted to playing computer games or internet games. They were sitting and playing and playing and playing. They neglected their eating for 2 or 3 days and eventually died only like that. So, is it that they have transcended their bodily platform due to being transcendental to the three modes? No. So, this kind of tolerance is tolerance in the mode of passion, intense passion, where they are so absorbed that they forget about their food and water also. So, absorption also can be in absorption in the mode of goodness, absorption in the mode of passion, absorption in the mode of ignorance. Like someone is absorbed in drinking alcohol more and more and more and more and more. This is that they are not even able to see that their own body is getting destroyed really. So that is absorption in the mode of passion actually. So none of these qualities are necessarily transcendental. So therefore, if Duryodhana is able to tolerate, maybe because he is hard-hearted, not necessarily because he knows the philosophy right. So, and then when it comes to differentiating between a Vaishnava crying and a non-devotee crying, see, there are, even within Vaishnavas, there are different levels. When a perfected Vaishnava cries for the loss of another Vaishnava, it is purely because he has lost the opportunity to associate with that Vaishnava. No other reason. But when a sadhaka cries, a sadhaka may still have attachment on the bodily platform, even though theoretically he knows that it is not right. But to develop that level of detachment may take time. So when a sadhaka cries, he knows that he may know the theory, he may theoretically understand the philosophy, but he may not necessarily have realized it. He may still be, he may still have attachments on the material platform. He may cry. So you cannot say that any sadhaka who cries, you cannot necessarily say that, he is crying on the transcendental platform. Not necessarily. Because the emotions may still be material emotions to a large extent. Is that relevant, Lokanath Prabhu?
Yeah, so actually, we differentiate. Now that again brings to that question about Mahabharata and Bhagavatam. We do differentiate between devotees and non-devotees. But if you go by Mahabharata, then there is no such distinction. Like we say that Pandavas fought as a service to Krishna. But if we
In Mahabharata, they are dharmic people. They are not necessarily devotees. The Mahabharata Pandavas are dharmic people.
Yeah, so we say that the Duryodhana was fighting for selfish reasons and Arjuna was, Pandavas were fighting for as a service to Krishna, so they are distinct.
No, Pandavas of Mahabharata fought for dharma.
Yeah, Nick, what the devotees say, that because their consciousness was different, so their destiny was different. But if we see Mahabharata, it appears that both were fighting for kingdom, and rather than Pandavas fighting for Krishna, it was that Pandavas were fighting for whatever dharma or for their kingdom. Both were fighting for kingdom, and Krishna was helping them. It appears that way.
Yeah, I mean, in one sense, Krishna was supporting the Pandavas. From the Mahabharata perspective, Krishna was supporting the Pandavas because Pandavas were dharmic. So that's why Krishna was supporting the Pandavas. And they did not want the, they had a desire for the kingdom from the Mahabharata's point of view. But in reality, Pandavas had nothing to do with kingdom. The Pandavas had, the only thing that mattered to the Pandavas was association of Krishna. There is nothing else that, you know, we are discussing from Brihad Bhagavatamrita now. And you should hear the speech of Yudhishthir Maharaj and Bhima and Arjuna, Nakul, Sahadev, Draupadi, Kunti Maharani. You know, it is mentioned about them that they are Krishna Darshana Jivana. Their only life and soul is darshan of Krishna. Nothing else actually matters to them. So, their acting on the, whatever is described in the Mahabharata is the Pandavas performing a stage show. They are not the Pandavas. The Pandavas of Mahabharata are performing a stage show to set the right example for dharmic people as to how you should live according to dharma. If you live according to dharma, then you get artha and kama. That is the teaching of the Pandavas in Mahabharata, but not real Pandavas. The real Pandavas can be seen off the stage Pandavas, though living their normal life. Those Pandavas can be seen in Bhagavatam, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, such pure devotional literatures, where they feel their heart. Even though in Mahabharata they may say that, yes, we want the kingdom. We have a desire for the kingdom. But to have a desire for kingdom is not an adharmic desire. It is a dharmic desire. And you can try to dharmically engage in warfare and get that kingdom for yourself. And Krishna's support will be there if you are on the side of dharma. That is the message of Mahabharata. But those Pandavas are performing a stage show. They are just acting a drama for setting the right example for the ordinary dharmic people of this world.
Prabhuji, actually, even Krishna support, na, if we see Mahabharata, then when the battle was decided, then there was meeting of the Yadavas, and Lord Balaram proposed that because it is a fight between two parties, both are our family members, and they are our cousins, and he was there because his daughter, Duryodhana's daughter, was married to them. So both Duryodhana and also cousins, so we should not get involved. This thing Balaramji said that both of us should go for pilgrimage. But Krishna says that because Arjuna is involved, I can't leave Arjuna. So that's why I won't fight, because you are saying we should not fight. But then I will support him. Even Mahabharata, even that doesn't appear, that because they are fighting for dharma, that's why Krishna is helping. It is appearing that because he is a very dear friend of Krishna, Arjuna particularly.
Yeah.
That's why Krishna is helping them.
Yeah, correct. He is a friend of Krishna. He is a friend of Arjuna, that's why he is supporting. But still, he is on the dharmic side also. But see, that's what. So, Krishna is a friend of Arjuna, that is for sure. But the Pandavas being devotees of Krishna is not a factor which is so much highlighted in Mahabharata. Even though it is not denied also. It is not denied in Mahabharata, but it is not so much highlighted also in Mahabharata. That is the point. So, Mahabharata's presentation, more or less, all this drama and tension and all that various things which are happening, which are so interesting and absorbing, the essential message is be dharmic. Live according to your dharma. That is the message of Mahabharata, actually. And that role, even though the qualification of the Pandavas is much higher than that, but being the kings, they had to play this role to set the right example for common public. So they do that.
ओके भाई, थैंक यू।
हरे कृष्ण। ये श्यामली माता जी।
या हरे कृष्ण प्रभु जी। प्रभु जी, दे से दैट व्हेन यू आर लीविंग द बॉडी, भगवत गीता सेकंड चैप्टर इज यूजुअली रेड इवन इन द हॉस्पिटल, दिस प्रैक्टिस इज लाइक फॉलोड। सो इज देयर एन अंडरस्टैंडिंग टू दैट? इज इट नेसेसरी फॉर अस टू रिमेंबर दैट वी आर द सोल्स बिफोर वी, like you know, to take the trouble to remember that yes, we are not this body before we leave our body specifically?
It is not very it is not very, it may not work for everyone, but you mean you are talking about the person who is leaving the body, you are talking about that person, right? Or is it for those who are grieving for the lost soul? For whom is the second chapter read?
For those who are leaving.
For those who are leaving, the second chapter is read. Well, maybe to give them some confidence that you don't actually die. You are the, because for, especially for those who are dying, if they learn that there is no death for the soul, I mean, it's definitely comforting, I would assume. If I'm just guessing, that's why probably they read the second chapter, because if a person who is going to die, if he stands that I'm really not dying, I'm very much going to live my life, just that it may be in a different body. It may give him some level of comfort, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you should ask Vishwaroop Prabhu why they do it. But this is what I think. Or maybe even Shyamlal Prabhu is there. He may be able to tell.
Shyamlal Prabhu is sitting right here. He's the one who's asking the question. But that's okay. I just wanted to know if it's like a...
there's some mention of Shastra for why it is
being done. If there's any mention, yeah, why it is being done. Or...
Yeah, I have no idea, Mataji. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I'm just guessing. I don't know for sure what is the... why they do it or if they're doing it, but just I'm guessing, maybe for this reason, they may feel little comforted. Yeah, I don't really have to, I don't die.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhuji.
Sonar Satay.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, actually, second chapter is Sara of Bhagavad Gita, no? So, where
essence, yeah.
Essence of Bhagavad Gita. So when you have less time, then in concise manner, actually all the chapters are covered in second chapter.
Yeah, that makes sense. Quite possible. Maybe for that reason, because contents of Gita summarize. So practically the whole Gita is summarized. If you have time, then maybe, you know, just 72 verses, you know, the whole 700 verses is covered. In the essence of the whole chapter, whole Bhagavad Gita is covered in that one chapter. Maybe for that reason, could be. Yeah, quite possible. Okay, there is a question in the, there is a comment and a question. Vrajaradhi Mataji says, crying is natural for Vaishnavas or non-Vaishnavas, but overcoming it and continuing our sadhana is different. Well, yeah, I mean, one sense. That also, to overcome, it's not that non-Vaishnavas also keep crying for the rest of their lives. They also overcome, right? Because, you will cry and cry and cry for how long? Till the pangs of hunger take over. See, in the material world also, as we were discussing the other day, you know, one emotion is eternal. Until another overpowering emotion or an urge takes over, only till then the previous emotion sustain. Grief can sustain only till hunger takes over. Then the urge of hunger will come. So it because of the grief, you may be able to tolerate that hunger for a while, but after some time, when it becomes intolerable, then grief takes a back seat. Then you go eat. Then when the urge of hunger is satisfied, then grief may come back again. right? Then, so that way, you know, it's always, even in the material world also, you know, it's not that people keep grieving forever. There is something else that distracts them from grief. But in a Vaishnava's life, his service to Krishna will distract him. Not distract, will positively keep him engaged so that he can overcome the lamenting situations. So this is something. See, otherwise, one emotion or another will always help us overcome the grief. But we should cultivate positive emotions. Positive means not materially positive. Positive means positive emotions for Krishna. Our eagerness to please Krishna, our eagerness to act in a way, in a graceful way, which would be pleasing to Krishna, which will be pleasing to Guru. Those kind of impetus should inspire us to not get too much carried away by extreme emotions and forget Krishna actually. So, there is another question by... Okay, these are some details that Sachi Pran Prabhu is asking. I am not an expert in this particular topic. How many days the soul remains in the body after death? Yeah, I think this is something you should be asking Vishwarupa Prabhu, not the right person to ask. Who will hear the second chapter? Is it the soul inside the dead body? Yeah, of course. Previously, people used to leave the body after 90 years, but now people are leaving the body even at a young age. Still, there is feast given due to departure of that person. Okay, I have no idea. So, and why? Maybe feast could be for multiple reasons. Feast could be, you know, because he has spent his life practicing Krishna consciousness. So definitely his he will have a better destination. Our feast could be for expressing gratitude. Our feast could be to attract blessings for the departed soul. It could be for multiple reasons why feast is given. So it may change from circumstance to circumstance. Like that. Okay, so let's just... yeah, we have just completed this 20th verse. But it's, what is the time now? Time is 9:10. Let me see if there are any, as per our protocols, we decided that after 9, we will have some time for generic questions, which is not directly connected with the Bhagavad Gita discussion. I will pause for a few seconds to see if any generic questions left. If there are no generic questions, then we will continue with our Bhagavad Gita discussion till 9:30. But if there are some generic questions, then maybe we will take for a few minutes. Anything anyone would like to ask? Because that was the protocol that we decided. Yes, Vahini Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhuji, my question was, does the soul also have needs? And if so, what are those? Because as we, initially, when we come to know of this philosophy, the soul, body and mind are different, we kind of understand it theoretically. But as we grow old, we realize that, you know, our body also needs care, and, you know, we need to care for mind also. So, you know, we go into the self-care mode, and we realize that, you know, the more we care for the body and the mind, the better we feel inside, you know, and, but, you know, as we age, we realize these facts. So my question is, like, how maybe we can only understand through our body and mind, and the soul is kind of, the need of the soul are pretty out of our reach. So certain times we just don't get it, like, you know, we may understand it theoretically, logically, but we just don't get it emotionally, like we don't understand it emotionally, and then that's how we continue with our habits or anarthas and things like that. So how do we understand the soul part, like, you know, that it is very tangible, like in a very tangible manner?
Well, are there needs for the soul? Yes, there are needs for the soul, but it only be gradually be realized, because since time immemorial we have been identifying with the body. So that bodily identification to go away will take some time. So, but for that, you know, we need to practice what is needed to decondition ourselves from this bodily identification. But while we are doing this deconditioning activity, you know, we have to certainly cater to the needs of the body and mind that is needed while we are in the conditioned state. But the point is, we cannot utilize our whole life just for that, you know, or we cannot, the significant time cannot go in just catering for the needs of the body and mind. So while in the conditioned state, we need to spend time to take care of the needs of the body and mind, but there must be sufficient endeavor that should go to decondition also, right? So I mean, I am just trying to think of an example to explain this. Let's say someone is in deep sleep, and in deep sleep, not deep sleep actually, in deep sleep you don't dream actually. So let's say someone is sleeping and he is dreaming, and in dream, like I will share my experience, you know, I have shared it few times. Once when I was in, this was many decades back, when I was in school, I had come home for vacation, and whole day morning to evening we were playing, and I was so tired that I came home and I slept. So this was evening time and I had slept quite well, and I was dream, was into this dream, and in my dream I was dreaming as if my mother had passed away actually. And it was such a traumatic experience. I was crying, and literally, you know, the pillow became wet. And in the meantime, my mother returned back from office. You know, she was working at that time. She returned back from office. She's knocking the door. No one is opening. She's ringing the bell. No one is opening. She's banging the door. No one is opening. Because I was so absorbed in my dream, you know, I was literally crying and crying. Then someone, people started coming down, and people were shouting from downstairs trying to catch my attention. And somehow or other, after some, maybe it must have been maybe 15-20 minutes, I actually got up, and then I opened the door and I saw that my mother was standing. So for me, it took some time to realize which one is reality. Is this a dream, or which one is a dream, like that? Anyway, but the point is, while I am in the dream, you know, if someone comes in my dream and tells that, don't worry, that whom you who you are seeing from a distance, you are thinking that it is your mother, but it is not your mother, and he may pacify me like that, right? So, and I may get pacified in the dream. Okay, that is and then my lamentation may stop, but then in the dream again some other lamentation may come, right? So, but ultimately the best course of action is, if someone wakes me up from that dream, if someone wakes me up from that sleep, and if I wake up from that sleep, then I will no longer be suffering this illusory pain and pleasure, right? So the point is that while I am, this waking up process will take some time. It's not going to happen overnight. It will take years and years of conscious practice. But while we are still sleeping, at least semi-sleep, while we are still in the dreamy state, there may be certain things that you may have to do so that you don't have a very torturous dream. You have little bit reasonable dream, you know, a pleasant dream. So therefore we have to see that so that is like taking care of our physical needs and mental needs while we are practicing sadhana bhakti, even though ultimately we want to, we know at least theoretically that we are not this body, we are not this mind, but still the body and mind are needed to realize that I am not the body and I am not the mind. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. So you do take care of that, but at the same time, do not overly pamper. Sufficient time should be given for our spiritual practices, and the spiritual practices in bhakti are also very much designed in such a way that our bodily and mental needs are also bodily needs, mental needs, emotional needs, and physical needs. Everything is actually taken care if one understands what constitutes bhakti in a very holistic way. Say, for example, how are the mental needs taken care of in bhakti? So for the proper functioning of mind, you need a favorable engagement. This is one way. And in bhakti, there is unlimited scope for engaging in various ways that one can always get favorable engagement. So for emotional stability, how can bhakti better? By proper association, right? By dadati pratigrannati guhyam atyati pruchati bhungte bhojayate seva. You can have the six kind of exchanges with devotees, and by that you can feel emotionally fulfilled also. How can you get physical nourishment? But you can eat healthy prasadam. Who is stopping you? You can always eat healthy prasadam and feel physically nourished. All these acts will spiritually nourish also. When you have a very nourishing emotional exchange with the devotee, not only will we be emotionally nourished, but we'll get spiritual nourishment also. When we eat prasadam, not only will we get physical nourishment, but we'll get spiritual nourishment also. When we engage in very, very likable, enjoyable services and various limbs of devotional service, not only will we get mental nourishment, but we will get spiritual nourishment also. So these are all primarily spiritually nourishing activities, which secondarily nourish the physical body, the mental body, the psychological self, and everything. So therefore, engaging, if you understand what is the full scope of devotional service, we will understand that the engagement in devotional service, when properly done under proper mature guidance, is capable of fully satisfying one on a physical level, psychological level, emotional level, and all, without deviating him from his spiritual pursuits. So one need not do separately thing for mind, body, and emotions, and separately do some devotional service. That's a very myopic understanding of what is bhakti. Bhakti is not just chanting. Bhakti, the scope of bhakti is very broad. But we have a very myopic understanding of what bhakti is, then we think that, oh, bhakti bhakti karke uska body ko neglect kar raha hai, uska emotion ko neglect kar raha hai, uska mind ko neglect kar raha hai. No, That's a very myopic understanding of what is the scope of bhakti. Bhakti has a much more broader scope. I don't know if it's relevant to your question, but...
Yes, Prabhuji. Yeah, it was really relevant. Yeah, I had asked this question before, the difference between anarthas and emotions. So if you could, you know, put some light there also, like how do we, because certain times we use them interchangeably, but certain time emotions have a different purpose and anarthas are something else. Like, I know they are arising from our conditioning and maybe, you know, from the gunas, like which mode are we acting in? Whereas emotions can actually serve some positive purpose of certain
times. Yeah. So, no. Emotions are not bad. Emotions are very, very positive. But the emotions should take us towards Krishna. While satisfying our mind and heart, emotions in themselves are not wrong. Actually, the spiritual life is full of emotions, actually. Spiritual life is charged with emotions. There is absolutely unlimited scope for emotional expression in the spiritual world. The spiritual reality is not devoid of emotions. So therefore, you know, we don't have to reject emotions, but we have to gradually transform our material emotions into spiritual emotions. So material emotions can be driven by anarthas. And there can be certain material emotions which are favorable to Krishna consciousness also. And there may be certain emotions which may be unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. So we need to properly address them in such a way that the person does not feel deprived also, but at the same time, he learns to actually dovetail it in Krishna consciousness. So emotions are not bad. Definitely emotions are very, very favorable. And emotions, you know, the spiritual reality is actually filled with emotions, actually, and it's very favorable. Is that relevant, Mataji, or did you want something else? Vahini Mataji.
Yes, Prabhuji. Yeah. This answers it well, and thank you. Both answers were really very, very relevant and kind of, you know, guiding me. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, one question was about the need of the soul, and there is a Prabhupada's purport that Keshav Numai Prabhu has sent. He says, the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. So this is the need of the spirit soul. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.8 purport. So that is talking about the need of the soul is to be free from material bondage. That is the need of the soul, actually. Anything else? Any would like to share, add? Uh, Okay, there is another question in the chat box, but it is not so relevant to the topic on hand. So I will pause it and take some in some other forum. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask? Okay, so I think then we will pause here because we have just 3-4 minutes left, and the next verse would need some discussion, and I don't want to just very abruptly leave it half done. So I think we will take this question in next session. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your wonderful participation. So hoping to have your association next Friday also. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.